pre-show. Pre-show time. And a very pleasant and very, hopefully very profitable, pleasant, profitable Thursday to you. What's today? Okay, so I'm taking my car over today to get the body work done. I had a small ding in it, and I want to get the body work done. So I'm going to take that over today. And then what else is happening today? That's it, man. It's a pretty loose day today, except for the usual stuff, which is all business-related. But I don't think we had anything extra. It's great to be with you guys. I did a whole pre-show. As you know, I was not here yesterday, and we're going to deal with that on the show today with Tom Catton, who's going to be a special guest. And Tom, it seems, I had stopped off. I was talking, you know, show ideas with Tom. And as it turns out, Tom invited me over to the health wagon, which was literally just a small hole in the wall where he keeps the wagon. And I was there, and I had some hot chocolate and a ham and cheese, all health wagon related. And apparently somebody had been handling it that had, you know, some sort of a stomach virus. And man, it was like, it was bad. It was real bad. And Tom is going to say, you know, what's this about? Are you trying to dog me? No, just Tom, you got to tell us, man, what's going on with your health wagon? Because I don't think it's that healthy of a wagon. So we'll have Tom Catton health wagon. Let me just write that down. There's Tom Catton's health wagon. There's my little notepad there. And Phil is ill. See, so that's how that's done. So there's my show notes. no, it's a little bit more involved in that, but, you know, try to keep these things as quiet as I possibly can. Now, looking at Steve McQueen and the Sand Pebbles, for which he received an Academy Award nomination, if not an Academy Award, period. I don't know if he got an Academy Award or not. My brother Dara, my Navy brother in Dara, is the VA right now with a couple of issues. He's fine. But we've got some, you know, stuff to consider there for him. Love you, brother. Very, very much. And know you're going to be okay. My sisters are looking after him, which is very, very good. And, you know, just stuff, man. Just fucking stuff. Again, I want to thank everybody that was out there in San Francisco on... I want to plug the Hollywood Improv, February the 5th. I hope you're there for our improv show. It'll be great. And I think we'll... If you enjoyed what we did in San Francisco, I'm going to expand and tighten that up a little bit for the Hollywood Improv. Now, San Francisco is a sketch fest. It's a theater. The Improv is a comedy club, so you twist it a little bit to accommodate two different environments. It's not really radically terribly different what I do. I don't know that, for instance, you would see other people that do a, quote, one-man show, which my one-man show as it exists is not as developed as, say, something that Eric Bogosian, and I'm not even comparing myself to him, but, I mean, as in terms of the writing and separate acts and so on and so forth, like a Bogosian, or, you know, in the past, some of the great one-person shows like Lily Tomlin's, you know. Nonetheless, it's more probably the way I do it now is more in keeping with a theater. And so when we go to do the Hollywood Improv and places like that, the improvs, the comedy clubs, we're going to kind of jimmy it a little bit, twist it, shape it, punch it, fuck it, feel it up, and give it, you know, give it the right the right twist, man. So Tom Catton today. What else? I think Ted Bell needs to So Ted Bell's going to be on. He's undergoing a $3 million renovation that's happening through the end of March. And he's not exactly sure he wants to be in the one-man show, but he will go ahead. There's a $3 million renovation happening at Ted's of Beverly Hills. Maybe it's not that much. $3 million, that's a lot of money. There's a $500,000 renovation, let's say, all told. And, you know, Ted's going to redo the front. You know, he wants to get this. There's a smell, you know, the kitchen. It's an old restaurant, you know. He wants to update some of the... boy, there's Gavin McLeod on a machine gun there in Sand Pebbles. Gavin McLeod, Steve McQueen, Richard Crenna, who went on to be... Richard Crenna at this time was in a TV show called The Real McCoys with Walter Brennan. And there's McQueen, who barely disguised his contempt for what he considered to be inferior actors in his character. You know, you could see in Steve McQueen's face his just pure contempt for the... I'm just kidding about that, but I mean, he played it very well. Look at Steve McQueen's face in Bullet as he is playing a scene with, like, Robert Vaughn. Look at his face in this movie as he plays scenes with Richard Crenna. You know? I'm not saying he hated those guys, I'm not saying that, but he's doesn't have a very difficult time working up a level of, like I say, a level of contemptuous feeling for those people. All right. Oh, shit.
I'm faded.
See, what are we doing here, man? I have been ten minutes, would you say? Yeah. Okay. What else we want to do here, man?
Let me just tell you, Phil, it's going to be a, you know, we're doing a renovation. We're doing a very clear renovation. It's going to be happening through the end of, you know, it's going to be happening through the end. Well, Phil, we're doing a clear renovation through the end of the month. I don't know what to tell you, you know, and we're doing a renovation at Ted's of Beverly Hills. It's going to be going through the end of the month. It's going to be, I think people are going to enjoy Ted's of Beverly Hills because the renovation is going to be happening there.
Now, Kevin Coneal is another guy I think I'm going to bring out for the one-man show. For those of you who didn't make the one-man show, we had six characters that we did, and the show ran an hour and change. The show ran an hour and 10, and it was a pretty easy hour and 10 to do because I did six different characters, giving each, and I did Mavis Leonard. That's the first time I've done Mavis on stage. You know, and here's the thing about, you're doing an impression. When you're on stage and you're doing a female, you're doing an impression of, you know, I can't be a female and look like a goddamn female. If I'm doing a male actor, at least I look like a male. You know, I am I are that. So I got to kind of play it weird. Gunboats Go Home. Sand Pebbles was based on a true episode, a true incident in the I guess it was Yangtze River. One of the rivers in China, American naval gunboats went up into the interior of China to, quote unquote, protect, you know, American interests, such as they were. I think there was a mission. The movie would have you believe it was a mission, and I'm sure it was a lot more than just a mission. And there was you know, gunfire, and there was actual armed you know, combat between the gunboats and the Chinese. Now that's a fact. Now the movie tells the story from the standpoint of this that uses that as the setting. And the movie is about, you know, protecting a mission, and that there's a soldier on board played by Steve McQueen who ran afoul of Chinese law, and they want him. He's a murderer, and they want this guy. And you got a lot of trigger happy Yankee sailors, trigger happy American sailors. And it's all very interesting, you know. There's Gavin McLeod, who's on a machine gun. And he's also, this is what Gavin McLeod was, considerably overweight. You probably don't know who he is. He was the guy that played, Gavin McLeod played the skipper on Love Boat. He also was one of the tank men who was, he was also one of the crew members of Oddball in Kelly's Heroes. He was the guy who was like, you know, he's the guy who was always giving him negative waves. Well, you always, Moriarty giving me these negative waves. And so he played comedy and he played drama. And so that's what we've got here. By the way, this gunboat the Americans are on in this movie is about the shittiest looking fucking rust bucket of a piece of shit. What are they trying? Did they send all the shit canned rust buckets over there? All right, well, just send all the look, we need Americans in China, but send the shit boats. Just nothing that we don't mind having sunk. Now this guy's got a mutiny. There's all kinds of shit. Simon Oakland is in this movie. They're all mutinying. Richard Crenna, they don't want to do what he wants them to do. You're a shit actor. You're a shit actor. And they don't want to give up, you know. And here is our good friend from Blade Runner who played the professor who got his eyeballs caved in by Rutger Hauer's android. As a younger actor, he's also one of the, I forget the name of the actor. I forget his name. He was also in Paths of Glory with in the Kirk Douglas movie with, you know, Stanley Kubrick. What the hell's that guy's name? I don't know what his name is. Hell of a good actor. He plays one of the seamen on board the boat. So, I guess I've sort of, you know, given you a whole lot of horse shit background on that. All right, enough of that. Tomcat and Health Wagon, Phil Fallon, one-man show at the Hollywood Improv. Let's see, what did we want to do here? What are these guys yelling for him to do? I can't, I gotta turn the sound up on this. What? All these guys were chanting some shit. La da da do 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 do.
This is where let's make all preparations for getting underway. Take her out of rifle range and anchor.
Aye, aye, sir.
Take her out of rifle range and anchor.
Captain,
well, the captain won't do anything. Uh-oh, looks like a mutiny. Gonna blow his brains out.
Make preparations for getting underway.
I thought I'd hear a pistol shot. The captain's gonna kill himself. I guess not.
Here, wear this. Come back up as soon as we secure.
So Steve McQueen's character, the Chinese want him because they feel he's a murderer. Yikes.
Make all preparations for getting underway.
I did that in Miami. I played the audio for movies. I forget what the fuck it was that I did. I don't know what the hell possessed me, but I played the audio for certain movies. It was a ridiculous idea. I mean, it really was. I'm sorry that I did it. I mean, for on air, probably is what kept us from having a 20 share instead of just a 15. Oh, well. What was that guy's name, man? That fucking guy in Blade Runner. You guys can look it up. Just heard something go. The fuck is that?
Ooh.
These sailors look like they're all humiliated or something. So they went upriver. I'm gonna have to watch this one, man. All right. Turn that thing down. I did a whole thing yesterday. Oh, I didn't tell you that during the pre-show, I actually did a pre-show yesterday. I started doing a show yesterday and couldn't finish it. And I emailed Alex, who is our main man operations guy. I said, Alex, I can't do the show. I had to bail out about a quarter of the way through the show. I felt like absolute shit. But I did a whole pre-show, and it had to do with Scientology. And the reason why I got into Scientology is I was mentioning I'd been on a rooftop in Hollywood on Tuesday, and I'd been at a meeting at this office, and we went up to the roof. And, you know, one of the great dreams I have is to put a rooftop deck on my house. I'm about a block from the sand, but I'd like to have a rooftop deck so I can actually see the ocean and have, you know... So, you know, that's my little dream. And also a spiral staircase. Went up a spiral staircase. So, went to this rooftop deck, and it was absolutely gorgeous, and they had these cabanas. It was a work area for the office. This is a building that has been renovated. It's in Hollywood. It's down off of Hollywood Boulevard. Probably at one time was more in... I guess that part of Hollywood was probably more warehouses, where perhaps props were stored and staging and stage materials. But this is now a building. It's a production company, and they had this rooftop. There was a number of other offices in there. And I went up on top of this roof, and we had had a cup of coffee, and I was talking with people and looking at the view. And I remember saying, I think to no one in particular, I said, boy, it's great to see this view of Hollywood because there's a couple of landmarks that if I see them, I'll know this is always... It's always sort of the old Hollywood. One of them is the Broadway, that large Broadway... I think it says Broadway Hollywood neon sign on top one of the older buildings. Now, the Broadway, which is a department store, I think is long gone, but that neon sign remains, which is cool. There's another sign that is for the Hollywood Tower Hotel. You can see that off of the freeway. There's another very visible sign, which is probably the Hollywood sign, which is the one on the hills. And I think one or two others. And then I said, but there was one that is that's sort of, you know, I said, it says something else about the town. And there it is, Church of Scientology. And it's right there, smack dab in the middle of Hollywood. There's a celebrity center over in, Las Feliz, Silver Lake, something like that. I've driven by it a million times. In fact, it's right across the street from Upright Citizens Brigade over there on... Franklin. So, I saw this, and then I got into this whole thing. I said, well, I've read a few books on Scientology. One of the people I was with said, you know, HBO's coming out with a documentary on Scientology. I said, man, that ought to be pretty good. I mean, I like the HBO documentaries. I haven't really done too much investigation into the how worthy they are. My understanding is they're very well researched, and many of them are award-winning. I don't often quote HBO documentaries, but I watch them when I can, especially the sports ones. But this one ought to be really good. And as we were talking about that, it came to mind how the Scientologists in the past had been extremely aggressive in protecting their brand, in protecting their religion, in protecting their faith, in protecting their church, which is different from their teachings, as I understand it, and as I believe I properly understand it. You know, there is a difference between a church and the teachings. And what's happened in Scientology, and I believe that this is happening more and more because the internet is taking away from the hierarchy of Scientology, the muscle people, the bullies, to be honest with you, the people that were aggressively harassing critics, it's taken their protective cover away. The internet is now the place, if there's one place where the internet does great work, it's exposing bad people who have been able to hide and effectively hide because they've had a lot of money and they have used that to effect, you know, the supporting all kinds of power. Scientology has done some things that I am not a fan of, one of which was obviously the breaking into and the theft of government documents back in the late 1970s with the so-called Operation Snow White and the harassment of authors and other people who are critical of them. On the other side of it, there are people that have left the Scientology Church, if you will, or people who've left the Sea Corps. Is that the name of that thing? The Sea Org. That's it. Which is, the Sea Org is like the highest clerical level, I guess, in Scientology. And the people that are in Sea Org have paid their dues, if you will, and they're really ensconced heavily in the apparatus. But there have been people who have left, who have been members of the Sea Org, and they've left and they have gone on to criticize Scientology, but or the Church of Scientology, but they continue to practice the religion. One of them is this guy, I think his name, I hope I'm correctly pronouncing his name, Marty Rabe. There's a few others. He has a blog that he writes. He was pretty close to David Miscavige, who's the head of, current head of Scientology. Anyway, that I find that to be interesting because, you know, I don't want to discredit or discount people's beliefs, especially if it's what they do for themselves, and they're not asking anybody else to fucking do anything. And I think the good Scientologists, the people who are just kind of hanging and doing their thing, are wanting to hang and do their thing. You know, whatever the fuck their religion is, I don't give a shit, and it's their business, so long as they're not fucking with me. And that was the problem with the Church of Scientology. It was out there fucking with you and me. When it breaks into a government office or a government agency, or when it's engaging in this kind of, you know, corporate espionage, when it's stalking and harassing critics, when it's, you know, violating the law, brother, you got a fucking problem, man. You talk about separation of church and state, man, there ain't none there. You're going to have the state get unseparated real fast. So I was talking about that with these people, and they said, well, one of them said to me that they had just gotten done reading the unauthorized Tom Cruise biography, which unauthorized is unauthorized, you know, meaning it could mean a lot of things. It could mean that it doesn't have access to a lot of materials that maybe a biographer should have access to. That can mean that, or it can also mean that it's unfettered and unrestricted, it's unedited in its effort to tell the true story of an individual's life. It could also mean that if it's unauthorized, the author feels empowered to just be as sloppy and willy-nilly with their research as they possibly can. And some authors are like that. Not every author, not every biographer, not every reporter is any good. So, you know, You have to, this is where you and I come in. We got to look at this stuff. We have to look at how it was researched, what was the source material. Anyway, I read one unauthorized biography in my life, and it was one of Jack Nicholson, and it was okay. The stuff that I didn't know that I found fascinating was his early years as a little boy who was led to believe that his grandparents were, I think his mother was his sister and his grandparents were his parents. Real oddball stuff there that Jack Nicholson came to believe, and only later in life did he find out what the truth was. It reminded me a lot of my own father, who believed that his parents were his, in fact, blood parents until his parents were dead, and he was a man of... He was a man approaching 35, and he was already married, and he already had two kids. And it was then that my father found out he was adopted. Now, I don't know what you do. It's never happened to me. I don't know what you do with information like that. But I will say that I don't, you know, it must be rough. I get it. But you can't let it fuck your whole life up, man. You got to find some way to put it into perspective, you know, and go and sin no more, don't you? I mean, you know, like I said, it ain't for me to say, but So I say that because I believe, for instance, in the case of Jack Nicholson, I think he did a pretty good job of putting all that shit in perspective. In fact, he went on to say that he gained a lot of respect for women, you know, and you can laugh at this if you want. I don't know. I mean, you know, those of you who have your opinions about Jack Nicholson, he gained a lot of respect for women given the role they played in his life, in his upbringing, and so forth. And then there's my father, who was angry and petty and rather, I would say, spoiled. And for the rest of his life, I think he felt he had that the world owed him something for the dog shit deal that he'd been handed, you know. And there's no question in my mind that he probably felt he that was providing for his kids a far better life than he had himself. And I think that he did, to a point, until he, you know, ultimately just collapsed under the weight of his own bullshit, which was, you know, his moral failings and so forth, which I could get into, but I won't. And it's crazy, man. It's goofy. It's way out there, man. It's way out there. All right. I don't have any more damage. There's no more damage that I can do here, folks. So let's just say, love you, need you, can't live without you. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.